Welcome back to We Do the Heavy Lifting. I'm your host, Dr. Jenny Yentis, and today we do college athletics. We're going to find out what actually is going on with college athletics. A lot has changed in the past couple years, and today we are very, very happy to have someone here that is an expert in this area, has a legal background, and can tell us all about it. So let's welcome our guest, Dr. Paul Bautista.
Thank you, my pleasure.
Now, in 2016, President Young for A&M appointed you to faculty athletics representative for Texas A&M, which means you're the primary liaison from Texas A&M to the SEC, to the NCAA, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. And you also serve on the Faculty Athletics Council and the A&M Pro Sports Panel, and you advise student athletes about contemplating a career in professional sports.
Yes, ma'am.
You've also been a county judge. You're currently a professor in sport management. You teach a class on all the legal aspects of sport. So we've got all those bases covered. And you have quite the connection because you also teach study abroad every summer. You're a busy guy.
I take Aggies to Germany and Austria on an incredible 5-week program.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Can I come in your luggage this summer?
You are certainly welcome.
Yes. All right. Well, with all of that, let's go back. You wanted to start way back when to get to where we are now. So tell us about how we got where we are with collegiate athletics.
Okay. The first thing I want to do is I want to read a quote.
Okay.
From Dennis Dodd, who is a sports writer for CBS Sports, and he wrote this almost exactly 10 years ago. And here's what he said about what was going on in college athletics. At some point in recent years, college athletics became a Bob Dylan protest song. Minus the folk guitar and harmonica, suddenly the system wasn't totally about games or the coaches or the standings or the championships. It was an awakening, a realization, a revolution. Perhaps even the NCAA itself will be non-existent. Remember, that was 10 years ago. So let's go back further than that.
Okay.
And to understand what's going on in college athletics, you have to understand the Sherman Antitrust Act. So think about John D. Rockefeller and mm-hmm. Leland Stanford and the robber barons that were monopolists and captured everything. And Congress decided that was not good for the American public. It was not good for the free market. So Congress passed something called the Sherman Antitrust Act in 1980. And basically what it says is every contract, combination, or conspiracy and restraint of trade among the several states is illegal.
So what's that mean in
two things. I was getting to that. Two things. If somebody tries to limit the free market,
okay,
and they have to do it across interstate lines.
Okay.
So for today, think about Google.
Mm-hmm.
Does Google have a monopoly?
I would say yes, but I don't know in technical legal terms.
Okay. I think they do.
Okay.
Congress is certainly questioning them
okay.
now. But let me give you a real quick example that everybody will understand. So
okay.
you go home today, and you need to put some gas in your vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go to a Texaco, a Shell, or an Exxon that are all on three corners when you mm-hmm. pass by. So they're in competition with each other.
Yes.
So if John D. Rockefeller and his Standard Oil Company owns Exxon and then he buys Texaco and puts the ownership of Texaco into his trust along with Exxon,
mm-hmm.
well, now you really only have two competitors.
Yes.
So if he also buys Shell, now all of a sudden you drive by, you see Shell, you see Texaco, you see Exxon, and you think they're competing with each other, but they're really not because the Standard Oil Trust owns all three of them. So what's that going to do to prices? It's going to raise
mm-hmm.
prices. So the Sherman Antitrust Act, for the most part, is about price fixing.
Okay.
And that's what's going on. Those are the complaints in all of the cases with the NCAA right now.
Okay. So how do we, for the general public, how do we view student athletes as being part of something that's price fixing? How do we get there?
Well, the student athletes aren't part of the price fixing.
Mm-hmm.
They're the victims of the price
okay.
fixing. So the NCAA started in 1906, and for 108 years, nothing really bad happened until you get to 2014 when a bunch of lawsuits were filed that Dennis Dodd talked about. And basically, the NCAA set whatever rules they wanted to. They said, here's what you can get for scholarship. You can get rooms, tuition, books, and that was it.
Okay.
And it also fixed the price of what athletes could get for being athletes at zero. So they basically had a rule that said you can't make money as a college athlete. And so some enterprising lawyers filed lawsuits starting in 2014 saying, wait a minute, this violates the Sherman Antitrust Act. And the NCAA argues, of course, well, really, this is about education. The plaintiff's lawyers say, no, it's a cartel. And by the way, Texas A&M and the other 1,075 universities and schools in the NCAA, they're co-conspirators. And when you think about it, what is the NCAA? Yeah, it's a separate organization, but it's basically those 1,076 universities.
That's really interesting, I guess. I mean, I'm pretty ignorant on the subject. I don't know a lot about it other than I know things are going on, but you're really enlightening it and making it. Yeah, I'm now starting to see the picture of how we got to where we are. So then what comes next then?
Well, let's talk about what's come already.
Okay.
So there's a case called the Alston case.
Mm-hmm.
And the Alston case was about things like full cost of attendance for your scholarship. It was about price fixing. And the NCAA took the position that we are carrying out an educational mission. We're not subject to the Antitrust Act.
Okay.
So the case gets all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. And the U.S. Supreme Court, in a unanimous 9-0 decision, said, yes, you are. And so,
yes, you are doing education, or yes, you are price fixing?
I'm sorry. Yes, you are. You're a monopoly, and you're price fixing, and you're violating the Sherman Act.
Oh, all right.
So out of the Alston case also came this idea that universities could give athletes education-related benefits. And so without going into the sausage making, athletes now at places like Texas A&M can earn up to $5,980 for hitting certain academic benchmarks. So that's over and above their scholarship and all the other things they get.
Okay. That's, for a student athlete, that could be a pretty sizable amount of money.
It is.
But it's not as sizable as somebody like Caitlin Clark's making.
No.
Yeah.
I saw a couple of days ago she signed with Nike for $27 million. But she was making $700,000+ while she was an athlete. She was on State Farm commercials and doing some other things. So that's the result of Alston.
Okay.
So there are a couple other things that are also going on. There's a lawsuit called the House lawsuit. And basically the House lawsuit says, when we go out and we play, when we compete, you're using our name, image, and likeness, and you're not paying for it. So name, image, and likeness is NIL.
Yeah.
And so they're saying on the Saturday afternoon broadcast where you're watching the football game, they're saying we should be paid for our name, image, and likeness. And that's the case that's really going to change college athletics, and it's going to happen pretty quickly, I think.
So this case, I've heard some things about this case. I've heard just what you said, that it would change the face of college athletics. Now, in this case particularly, these are student athletes, prior student athletes, that are asking for, they're asking for back pay? Or how does that?
There are several lawsuits.
Okay.
So some of them are current athletes, and some are former athletes in different cases saying, wait a minute, I didn't get the Alston money, so you were violating the Sherman Act by not giving me that $5,980. I want my money. And so those cases are making their way through the court system right now.
So if they rule in favor of the student athletes that they were owed that money.
Let's say this, they will.
The
courts
will. Then where's that money coming from?
Well, that's the next great question. So the House lawsuit and some of these other lawsuits, the damage number that's been thrown out by the plaintiff's attorney that they think they can prove is $1.4 billion. That's with the B.
Ooh.
under the Sherman Antitrust Act, if you violate the act, you're subject to treble damages. So you triple that amount. So that's about $4 billion that is at risk in one of these lawsuits. And so where's that money come from? Well, it will come some from the NCAA, but who are members of the NCAA? Texas A&M and 1,075 other schools. Now, there's an interesting legal question about whether or not the schools would actually be liable through the NCAA, and that hasn't really come up yet, but at some point it will. But the interesting thing about the House suit, there are settlement negotiations ongoing as we speak. Earlier this week, Jeffrey Kessler, who's the lead plaintiff's attorney, who's been filing all these lawsuits, came out and said, we're in negotiations about this, and hopefully we'll be able to negotiate a settlement. But if they don't, we're scheduled for trial January 27, 2025. We'll go to trial and we'll win and we'll go from there. And actually, he's right. So many people think the president of the NCAA has the most power, or Commissioner Sankey of the SEC, or Commissioner Petito of the Big Ten. That's not true. Jeffrey Kessler is the most powerful man in college athletics right now, and he's just a trial lawyer.
Fascinating. I really am just intrigued by all of this. So my question is, how far back do you go? Let's say you say they're going to win, and they win. I mean, my great-grandfather was a student athlete, potentially. Can I file on behalf of him?
So was I. There's a four-year statute of limitations.
From
the point they filed the lawsuit, they can go back 4 years.
All right.
And there's a lot of athletes that have been through universities in the 4 years before the lawsuit was filed, plus all the ones that are here now. So there's about 500,000 student athletes in the NCAA right now.
Okay, so you're looking at a very large, I'm now kind of understanding how they're getting to this billion in damages. So, go ahead.
Let's talk about potential settlement, though.
Okay.
One of the benefits, if they can settle the case, is the judge will enter an order, which may put some guardrails on all of these NIL things that we talk about.
Okay.
The numbers that I keep hearing is somewhere between 10 and 20% of athletic department budgets would then go to student athletes.
I've also been told, though, that athletic departments don't make any money.
Well, in a sense, that's true. Some do. But there's a lot of people that take their paycheck home every month, and they spend their whole paycheck. Yeah. So it's going to have many unintended consequences. I talk about this, and so Texas A&M, our budget's $160 million. So we're talking about $15 or $20 million that we might be paying to student athletes. Well, where's that going to come from? Well, there's two ways you can do it economically, and only two. You raise your revenue or you reduce your expenses.
Yeah.
And honestly, we're going to have to reduce expenses. We've already seen that on campus this week.
Yeah. So raising revenue, that's an interesting question that's maybe for another podcast, but I'm very interested in understanding how the contracts work with different, like ESPN, ESPN2, and how that plays into things. Because I think people have this, general public have this vision that these schools are rolling in money, that these football programs in particular are just rolling in money. And I don't think that that's actually true. And now if this goes through, it's even less potentially. So is ESPN going to pay out even more to help potentially cover this? I doubt it. They're also a for-profit company.
That's a great question.
Yeah.
So let's start with the proposition that a lot of people don't understand, and that is no tax money goes to the athletic department. They are completely independent financially of the university and the state of Texas. So they don't get any tuition money, they don't get any tax money, they don't get any money from the university. That's not the case for all universities across the country, but that's the case in Texas. So basically, Texas A&M has three ways to raise, or four, to raise revenue. Mm-hmm. They sell tickets to events. They have donors that donate money. Mm-hmm. They have media rights. And then they have people like the food concessionaires and their concessions mm-hmm. and parking and things. And that's it. So there's kind of a limit on what they can raise.
It's quite the conundrum that athletic directors are faced with.
It is. As Dennis Dodd said, this is a revolution, and everybody's getting ready for it. And the interesting thing is, last Friday I was asked to speak on a panel in Washington, D.C. at the Bush School with the Association of College Faculty Senates. Okay. And so they were trying to figure out what all's going on. By the way, everybody agrees that you're going to have to be a student athlete to participate. There mm-hmm. won't be any professionals in the sense of they're ringers, they come in, they get paid to play, and that's all they do. Everybody agrees they're going to end up being have to be students. But the last item on their agenda was, what is college athletics going to look like in 5 years? And I sort of chuckled, and I told them, you need to change that agenda item to what it's going to look like in 5 months, and perhaps even 5 weeks. So I have no inside information. I just have many years' experience, and my gut instinct tell me something's going to happen this summer.
Right. And just because somebody might be listening to this later on, we're recording this late April of 2024.
That's correct.
So
I think something's going to happen this summer. I don't think the defendants are going to want to go into court and risk the number that they're going to risk. I think whatever we have, which may be a complete new setup, will be in place for the 25-26 school year.
Okay.
So, by the way, I didn't say this when we were talking about the finances, but the only program at Texas A&M that actually ends up in the black is the football program. So that supports all of the other programs. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about raising revenue or cutting expenses, I think about if I was a male golfer, if I was a male tennis player, probably not at A&M, a male baseball player, but in a lot of universities, male baseball player, perhaps track runners, male track runners, I would be really concerned about whether my program's even going to be a scholarship program going forward.
I've heard that from others as well,
And the scary thing about it is, well, first of all, Title IX, and that's a whole other subject for another day, but we train our Olympians. And so Congress has not done anything yet. And, of course, they can't agree what time of day it is or even what day it is. But when they can give some protection to the NCAA, they haven't yet. There are 10 or 11 bills pending in Congress, but they really haven't moved yet.
Yeah.
I think until it gets really, really drastic, they're probably not going to. Yeah. But I think about, you think about where do we train our Olympic athletes, our gymnasts, our track people.
They come out of college athletics.
Scary. Yeah, it's scary. Yeah. We're the only country in the world, with kind of an exception of Canada, that has the system we have. Yeah. And it's going to be a revolution. The system's going to change, and it's going to be scary in a way. Mm-hmm. It's going to be interesting. As a lawyer, it's fascinating. Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be come back in 6 months and let's see what happened.
Well, we're going to have to follow up on this with another podcast. We're reaching the end. I think we've exceeded our 20 minutes already, but let me ask you one last question.
Okay.
Is there something you want to leave our listeners with? What's the key piece take home out of all of this that you'd like to leave them with?
Nobody likes what's getting ready to happen. Mm-hmm. But just hang on to your seat, because it's going to be significantly different. And remember that the student athletes are going to get protected. So they are going to get protected. Yeah. And the good news of all of this is, with NIL now, there's going to be a lot of athletes that might have gone out for the NBA or the NFL and not made it, they're going to make more money with NIL staying in college instead of going pro. And I'd also like to give a shout out for the Voices of Impact in our College of Education.
Yeah,
I did a presentation on that two or three months ago. So if anybody's interested, it's only 5 or 6 minutes long, but it kind of really encapsulates everything that's going on. If they'd like to access that,
absolutely, we will post a link to that in our show notes. Okay. Thank you so much, Dr. Batista, for being here with us today, and thank you to our listeners.
Pleasure.
For joining us for another episode. I hope you were as captivated as I was. I learned so much in the past 20 minutes, and that's really the purpose of We Do the Heavy Lifting, is really to bring to light some of the issues that many of us don't understand because we don't have the time or the expertise or knowledge. So thank you for sharing with us.
It's my pleasure.
And if you have any comments, questions, or topics you'd like to hear from us, please feel free to send us an email at huffines@tamu.edu. And until next time, stay healthy. Thank you.